Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, psychics, and even Bigfoot. The show is about to begin. All right, we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. Hoping the listeners have had a great week. We have a great guest tonight. We have Clay Faulkner. He resides in Milwaukee, Oregon, out in our neck of the woods. He has a passion for palmistry, tarot, runes, and geomancy. And he studied palmistry for 10 years and has worked professionally for 6 years in palmistry. And so we're looking forward to having a good show here, and we'll get kicked off here in a second with the guest. And as usual, I am joined with our co-host. How are you doing, Sherry?
Very good. Thank you. Very good. How about you, Jason?
I'm doing good. I'm noticing that the weekends seem really short, and I don't really like it. You know, now I'm working a regular job. It's just, I don't know. I just want a permanent weekend. I want to retire on an island somewhere.
What island?
I don't know. Somewhere tropical. but no, my week's been pretty good. And how about yours?
Very good. Very, very good. Busy, busy, busy. My work's picking up, and it's just been, I've been very blessed.
Awesome. So, now, we were talking a little bit before the show, and you had picked out a few little items that you wanted to talk about.
Yes. I just picked up a story article on the internet. It's quite interesting. Never thought about this and saw pictures, but it's called Postmortem Victorian Postmortem Photography. And these pictures, they had like 20, 25 of them, and they actually are kept as mementos of dead family members.
I've seen those before. Those are super creepy.
I know. And you would not believe some of them. They look like they were still alive. Their eyes were open, and they would position them in such a way that some of them were deceiving.
Wow. I just want to let the world know that I do not want that done to me. I do not want to be postured in a position when I'm a corpse. And, you know, I have seen there are people, particularly in places like South America, that do that still to this day. I've seen the pictures. So usually what they do in these South American countries, I believe South America, is they set up the corpse, the body, in a manner that best represents how that person was. So say if somebody was a heavy gambler and a drinker, they would pop them up and dress them up and put them at a table with a deck of cards and a bottle of whiskey. And it's really eerie to see.
Yeah, it's just quite interesting. Some of them, like I said, they didn't even look like they were deceased. Quite interesting. And they had where they had the whole row of family, like there was like five kids, and each ones were standing up. Each one were standing and kind of standing a little bit to the side. And this little girl, which was the youngest, she apparently was deceased, obviously. But her eyes were closed, but they made her stand up just like in a row. It was quite interesting to see the pictures. Pretty eerie. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, when you start getting like the whole family members involved, that's where I think strangeness kind of gets a little too extreme. Even though that's extreme to begin with, you start, you know, the kids, you got grandma, you got the kids. Yeah, but I guess, yeah, you know, it was a different world back then, and that was the thing to do. I know back in the day, people used to, you know, take hair and do stuff with hair and put hair in lockets and do kind of had a lot of traditions that we don't carry through to the modern day. Now it's all about technology and stuff. Nowadays people want to cryogenically freeze themselves or shoot portions of their DNA into outer space. It's crazy.
It's different. Very, very different.
Well, I ran into a story that I thought was interesting. It's not a new story. There was a guy named Al who there's a project back in the day. I don't know if it was the 60s. It's called the Montauk Project, and it has to deal with the USS Eldridge, which is a ship that was allegedly involved in some experiments regarding teleportation, and there were claims when they tried to teleport the ship that all these weird things happened. Well, this guy, Al, supposedly was involved in all that secrecy stuff back in the day, and he came back claiming that he spent 6 weeks, he was teleported into the future to the year 2137 and spent also time in the year 2749. So he came back, he's telling this fantastic story of being a time traveler, and I wanted to share just a few things that he said were going to happen in the future. And okay. some of the claims he's making is that in the future, the medical system will use vibrational and light treatments. I don't know, maybe that's all it says on that one. And there's going to be a lot of earth changes, a lot of geographical changes that will begin in the 21st century in 2025. So I guess we're seeing that already. There have been some earth changes, I guess. You have global warming and the melting of the ice caps. He said that the coastlines and interior of the U.S. and Europe were drastically different from the way they are now. The water level had risen in Florida and was reduced to the panhandle only. Atlanta, Georgia was only 3 miles from the ocean, and Mississippi came an inland waterway, and the Great Lakes had become one large lake, a super great, great lake. He said the U.S. infrastructure had collapsed. The U.S. and Canada were no longer referred to as nations. We've heard rumors about this. I've heard rumors about unifying Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. So maybe he did. I don't visit the future. He said that a loose form of martial law existed in 2137. The central government was gone. And let's see here. The worldwide population was reduced to 300 million. I don't know how many there are now, but a few billion maybe. So that's quite a drastic reduction. And the U.S. population out of that 300 million was reduced to about 50 million. So that's going to save a lot on traffic. And, so that's just a fraction of what he discussed, this time traveler that was involved in a lot of secret stuff, allegedly, decades ago. So there you have it. If anybody was interested in learning about what the future is going to look like, there's going to be changes in the coast, no central government, and there's going to be a lot less people, so you're not going to have to wait around and sit in traffic. So there you have it. That's the future. What do you think? Does that sound like a good future? You are you good with a loose form of martial law and maybe a coast in Arizona?
That would be fine with me. The loose, yeah, definitely.
Well, not if we're still in Oregon, because maybe we'll be underwater. All right. So did you have anything else? We'll bring Clay on and talk a little bit about palmistry.
The only thing is that I noticed on another site that I was reading earlier was that there's different blood types and you have different personalities that they have discovered. Your blood type reveals a certain type of personalities. So that's quite interesting how they were able to make studies and do some research on that.
Did they say what traits are to which blood type?
Sure. I can quickly name off some of them, or just quickly the worst and the best traits. Blood type A is the best traits are conservative, introverted, reserved, patient, punctual, and perfectionist. The worst traits are obsessive, stubborn, self-conscientious, and uptight. Blood type B is creative, passionate, animal-loving, optimistic, flexible, individualistic, and the worst traits are forgetful, irresponsible, and self-centered. Type AB is cool, controlled, rational, introverted, and empathic. And the worst trait is aloof, critical, indecisive, and unforgiving. And the last type is blood type O, which is ambitious, athletic, robust, self-confident, natural-born leaders. Worst traits are vain, insensitive, and can be ruthless.
So, huh, well, I'm O, and those negatives don't sound like me at all. I'm the opposite of that. I don't know. I'm going to question that research.
Yeah, exactly. It can apply to us maybe at one time or other, or maybe they're, I don't know how they did that research, but this was basically their consensus. And then I also know that that they've also done studies with the type of blood type, what kind of foods would agree with you. And I'm kind of like you, Jason. I'm kind of questionable as far as what agrees with your blood type. Peter Adamo was the one that wrote the book about eat for your blood type, and I'm just not quite sure if that's, you know, he did extensive studies, but I'm on the opposite. I kind of teeter on both sides, so.
Well, I'm
anyway,
certainly.
Let's, go ahead, let's
I'm
bring our guest in.
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, I'm certainly hoping that blood type O, the food that works with blood type O is pizza, chicken wings, and cheeseburgers, because that's what works
Sounds
for
like
me.
My kind of food.
All right, let's bring Clay on. Hey, Clay, how's it going?
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me on. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's Sunday, so I'm gearing up for another work week.
Awesome.
Good.
So
now we're looking forward to being on your show and first radio interview that I've had, so it's kind of exciting for me.
Awesome. Well, we're definitely glad to get you on the show. And we have never talked about palmistry. And honestly, I've been in the paranormal for a long time, and I know nothing about it. Please educate us on, you know, your history with it, and maybe if you know the origins of palmistry, where does it come from?
Well, the origin, strangely enough, is all over the world. You find it in every corner of the world, which is, I suppose, ancient man probably in some form practiced palmistry just as he looked at the stars and studied the heavens. So it's been around for thousands and thousands of years. I think it's just been developed over thousands of years for where it began. I think they probably saw patterns in how people's behaviors were and how the lines coincided with that. And so that's, I think, probably the beginning of it. Personally, I think I was first introduced to it about maybe 20 years ago. My sister actually had learned some palmistry from somebody, and she was reading my palm, and I think that really kind of sparked an interest for me. And probably maybe about six years later, I purchased my first book on palmistry and just really kind of got interested in it, and really didn't start studying palmistry until about 10 years ago. And then about 6 years ago, I finally, after reading palms of friends and family and acquaintances and, you know, getting a real feel for it and practice that way, I started reading palms professionally at markets and different venues like that. And I just had a lot of fun with it. I've also done the tarot, the runes, and the geomancy. And strangely enough, probably 90% of the people that I read for all request palmistry. So apparently it's a big interest for a lot of people that I don't know if there's not a whole lot of palmist readers that provide this, and so maybe that's why there's more of an interest in that. Or I don't know. I don't really understand why there'd be more of an interest in that than something else. But I sure enjoy doing it, and I have some really great experiences with it and results from it. So it's just been a lot of fun.
It sounds completely fascinating to me. When I think of palmistry, mm-hmm. I think of like the neon palm on the psychic's shop. You know,
mm-hmm.
It just seems really interesting. What can you tell, like if you were reading somebody's palm, and I know there's a lifeline, and I know that
mm-hmm.
Certain breaks in the line mean certain things, like traumatic events or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
what can you read? Like how in-depth can you go reading a palm?
Well, with the palmistry, you can read like a person's disposition. You can read based on a person's the trajectory of a person's life, what kind of illnesses or problems they might have in the future. I was talking to Sherry about this in terms of a person's trajectory is, for instance, somebody that smokes and drinks and eats fast food all the time. Well, based on that trajectory, you can surmise that they'll probably die young or be sick. So the body has a way of revealing what's coming in the future based on how you conduct your life. And so you can actually pick up on future problems today and give people a heads up so that they can make some changes in their lives and avoid having whatever problems that I can see in their palm. And so I see the palmistry as being very beneficial in that way, as being kind of a warning sign for people that they can make some changes and avoid problems that they might have in the future.
So
but
it's not
there's,
set in stone or anything like if.
No, I don't believe that the future is set in stone. I think there's too many variables that can change things, and I think that people have free will, and so I don't think that there's ever this fate for people. I think that based on the information that we have or the information that the body reveals, that we can surmise what is going to happen for us in the future. Most of the palmistry that I do is not so much about warning people about future events, but it's more about clarifying who that person is to themselves. We often don't really understand who we are. We think of ourselves in a certain way, and by reading someone's palm, you can really reveal to them, like a mirror being held up in front of them, exactly what kind of person they are. I've had readings where I've had someone bring a friend with them, and they both sit at the table with me, and I'll read for somebody, and I'll tell them certain aspects of themselves, and they'll just vehemently disagree with me, and their friend is shaking their head emphatically, "Oh no, that is you." So we often don't see ourselves as we really are, and palmistry is a great way to really see who we are deep inside and not just that persona.
In other words, your body doesn't lie, does it?
Your body doesn't lie. It's your body will always tell the truth. And like I said, I think it's just a great way to understand who we are. Sometimes we do things in life and we're like, I don't really understand why I did that. That's just kind of, I don't know why I'm so obsessive or I'm so overbearing or why I'm so weak-willed or different things like that. And when you can read someone's palm and reveal to them certain aspects of their lives, there's things that we can discern about somebody regarding their childhood. And that lends to how they are in the present. It kind of gives us information as to why someone might pick the wrong partner, for instance, in marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there are a lot of obscure signs in the body that relate directly to health problems, signs that you wouldn't even think of. That much of a stretch
mm-hmm.
to think that the palm of your hand will also be able to to tell you things about your health. I mean, there could be an aspect of it that we just don't understand. For example, there, if you have a crease in your earlobe, you're way more likely, you know, a vertical crease in the earlobe, you're way more likely to die of heart disease. It's, there's so many obstructions like that. Yeah, you can just Google that and you'll see there's a certain crease that somehow your body registers heart disease by creating a crease in your ear. I don't know. They don't know much about it, but it's well documented.
Well, that is interesting. Well, if you were to read someone's lifeline, and a lot of people think, well, if your lifeline is short, then obviously you're going to have a short life. And I have to correct people on that are fearful that they have this short lifeline, and obviously, you know, they're not going to live long. And I just say, well, that really doesn't mean you're going to live a short life. It just means that your vitality is not as good as it should be. And I have had people come to me with worried looks on their faces saying, I've had someone read my palm before, and they told me that I was going to die by the time I'm 30. And I tell people that say that when they have a palmist read something like that for them, they should just disregard what they're saying, that you cannot tell somebody when they're going to die based on what you see in the palm. So I think that there are those people that like to go with the gloom and doom because it's scary and spooky and it really grabs people's attention. But I don't think that it really helps anybody by trying to scare them, especially when it's something that's not accurate. So I really try and focus more on the beneficial side and the helpful side and the positive side of the palmistry in order to help people and to guide them into a better lifestyle.
I agree.
Sherry, now you had a reading. I mean, you don't have to reveal too much detail, but I mean, you thought it was pretty remarkable because you had one from Clay, right?
I have had two of them now. And I have to say, Clay, you're spot on. I love it.
Thank you.
I just feel that I've gone to a lot of readers, and I feel that Clay is very down to earth. He's practical. And he's to the point. He's not one of these where he jumps around the bush and wordy and lengthy and, you know, on and on and on. He's just to the point, and I love it. That's my style, too.
Thank you, Sherry.
Very good. I highly recommend you to people that really want to get some answers and get some guidance. But, you know, I really feel the same way. If you get to, whether it's palm reader, tarot card readers, or whatever, they start telling you you're going to die, you're sick, this and that, I'd be going somewhere else. That is not the purpose
exactly.
of somebody going for reading. That's how I feel, too. Exactly.
Yes. And I just wanted to mention quickly, and I don't know if Sherry had mentioned anything to you, Jason, about this, but I did a reading for Sherry in April, and I don't think she'll mind if I reveal this. I've read very many palms, and when I read her palm, I noticed something very distinctly different about her than I've seen with anybody else, and that is that she has a series of vertical lines in her palm.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have horizontal lines in their palm, which indicates more of an interest in gaining power, materials, money, earthly things, control, and she had the vertical lines more, which indicates that she is more interested in developing herself and making herself into a better person, connecting spiritually, and I just thought that was very interesting because I have not seen that with anybody else except for Sherry, so that was a unique experience for me.
I know you've got me looking at my palm, which I never do. I have the three main lines, the one that kind of, and there are no visuals here, so obviously it's hard to talk about, but you have the line that kind of goes around the thumb, and you got the one at the top of the palm that from the ring finger or whatever, but I do have one vertical line down the middle of everything. What's that one?
Yeah, that's your line of destiny. Some people call it a lifeline. I mean, not lifeline, but I can't think of the other name for it. But it, most people call it your destiny line. And that really has to deal with, like, your career and how you see yourself, how well how well you identify with yourself, and it also has to do with your character. And you'll find that people that have a very strong line down the center of their hand, like what you just described, it's probably going toward your middle finger. That is,
yeah.
If it's deep and strong, then that indicates that you have a strong character. And where it begins is important too. If it starts low at the base of your hand, toward the heel of your hand, then that shows that you've had a strong sense of yourself from an early age. And as it goes up toward your fingers, that's actually like a timeline that as you go, you'll see, and you're right, this is kind of hard to do on the radio because you don't really have a visual, but you'll have the line that crosses, the first line that crosses under your fingers is the heart line. The next line that's usually right in the center of your hand that crosses horizontally more or less is your head line. Well, where that destiny line crosses at your head line is usually right around 35 to 40 years of age. So that kind of gives you an idea of where you're at in life. And as you go further up and that line crosses or touches your heart line, then that's usually right around 50 years of age. So you can kind of see how your life is in terms of like your character and your career based on that line and a time reference based on your head line and your heart line.
Yep. Mine terminates at the middle line there.
It does.
It stopped.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I hope that's
not bad. And how old are you now, Jason?
42.
42? Okay. So what that tells me, if it stops at the first line, which is your headline, that you're probably going to continue on the same path that you have. There won't be a lot of variance in your lifestyle. That you are open to make changes, but there is nothing significant that I see for you in terms of changing. It's almost like you've have gotten yourself to a place where you're content being where you're at and doing what you're doing. So, and maybe it just you're at that place where you just feel like you can't progress on to something else, but that's, you know, where you're kind of just going to be at life is doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That sounds accurate to me, but yeah, I know it's hard without seeing it. Now we do have a caller that's been waiting for a while. Do you want to take a question from a caller?
Sure.
All right. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this? Anybody there?
Can you hear me okay? Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah. You're live.
I'm actually calling because I've called before and you gave me advice on how to sleep at night. I'm still having the same nightmares that I've been having for a while. Is there any way you can pray for me and help me?
I don't recall giving advice on sleep, but we're talking about palmistry right now. Do you have a question regarding palmistry?
It was a psychic attack on me and that I just needed to face my attacker when he comes at me again, and it didn't work out well.
All right. Well, I appreciate the crank call. I give you kudos for your tenacity. Well,
okay.
There's the risk when you take callers, but sorry about your fake psychic attack. I have no idea what he's talking about. You know, it's funny. Sometimes we get a flurry of crank callers. It's actually been a while since we've had one. But I guess we can move on and move forward and hope the best from whoever that was.
That might just be your lucky charm.
Yeah, maybe go see a professional, not like a psychic professional, but maybe a psychological one. I don't know. Mm. So anyway, so yeah, the palmistry thing sounds completely interesting to me. And like you said, you were talking about mine, and that sounds accurate. I think I've hit a brick wall with the in terms of career and stuff like that. I don't plan on changing my direction at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and maybe that's just because you're basically content with what you're doing. And, you know, and that's fine. I mean, my line of destiny ends at my heart line, which, you know, I'm 54 now, so I can see that, you know, this is what I'm doing is basically what I'm going to be doing. And, you know, I'm basically content with where I'm at in life. And, you know, I like to see more involvement with the metaphysical world. And I think that I'll probably have that. But in terms of career, probably will not really see any big changes, at least anytime soon. So, but that's fine.
What about me, Clay?
I honestly, Sherry, I don't remember your line of destiny. Can you look at your hand and tell me what it looks like?
My right hand or left hand?
Your right hand. Oh, I should mention that based on which hand is dominant is the one that you read pertaining to your life now. Your less dominant hand, say if you're right-handed, your less dominant hand would be your left hand, and that would be the hand that you would read for more of your childhood, the things that were impressed upon you as a child, usually by your parents, and it's also more of the subconscious side of you, kind of the buried things that are in your life that you don't really face or want to look at. But going back to your hand, Sherry, if you hold your right hand up and you're looking at that line that cuts down the center of your hand, usually it's just below your middle finger.
That is correct.
Okay. And where does that start based on the heel of your hand? Does that start low or does that start like halfway up your hand or where does that start?
Is that the very first major line that comes across my hand, with the palm, or is that the one that slopes down? Is that the one? Which one are you talking about?
Okay, the line that goes vertically from your middle finger down to your heel. Some people don't have that line, by the way.
Oh. Well, it goes all the way down to... The middle part of the finger goes all the way down to the bottom towards the middle part of my palm.
Okay. Does it reach the heel of your hand?
Yes.
Okay. Then that just shows me that you've had a strong sense of yourself early in life. And would you say that line is strong and continues in a straight manner?
Yes, it's very prominent.
Okay. Then people that have very strong characters will often see that this hand or this line in their hand is probably the most pronounced line in their hand.
Okay.
Which is interesting. If you are more of an emotional person, then your heart line will be more pronounced. If you're a more intellectual person, then your head line will be more pronounced.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Wow. So. We do have a really good question in chat that I would like to get your input on. So the question is, does work, sports, or activities, does it affect the line in your hands, or does age, you know, change any of those lines at all? Like, it would make sense if it did. So how much of those sort of things are a factor with the lines in your hand?
Well, your lines are constantly changing. You could do a handprint of your hand today, And a year later, you could do another handprint, and you would see quite a bit of change in your hands. So our hands are, our lines in our hands are constantly changing. I think that based on the things that we go through in life, can make changes in our hands. It's also the way that we think. The lines in our hands are kind of like pathways, and if we think along the same line over and over and over again, then that just causes these lines to become more pronounced. But as we change the way we grow, like you probably are not the same person today than you were, say, 5 years ago, then the changes in how you look at things or how you think are going to change the lines in your hands. So our hands, the lines in our hands are constantly changing. And it's easy to see that if we can do a palm print, and a year later do another palm print, you'll be pretty amazed at the changes that happen in your hands, on your the lines on your hands.
Yeah, because it just makes sense that it wouldn't be a constant. I never look at my hands, so I have no idea if they've changed at all. But it's fascinating. And I, you know, one thing I did want to ask you, I don't want to change subjects too much, but I was really curious about this. I had never heard of geomancy. What is that? I assume that has geo, must be the earth or something, but I have no idea. What is that?
Geomancy actually means earth knowledge. And it's more of kind of an obscure form of divination. I had never heard of it before, and I had happened to run across it, and I don't recall where I ran across it, a number of years ago. And I really kind of got interested in it, interested in all kinds of metaphysical things, and started studying it and found out that it was actually remarkably accurate. And really what it entails is, well, there's a number of ways that you can do it. Casting of lots is really what it boils down to. And what I have is four sticks, and I have a line on one side of each stick and then two lines on the opposite side of each stick. And I'll rub these sticks together and then throw them down, kind of like yarrow sticks with the I Ching. And I will count the number of marks on these sticks. And depending on if the number comes up even or odd, will tell me how to build a geometric figure on a what they call a shield, a geomancy shield. And you... kind of complicated because it's more of a visual thing too, but you build this shield based on all these castings of these sticks. Now some people use a tray of dirt or sand, and they'll use a single stick, and they'll poke the sand over and over and over again, not counting the number of times they poke the sand. And then they'll stop, and then they'll count the pricks in the sand. And then they'll know from that number whether it's an odd number or an even number. And they'll start to build their shield using that. So it's really kind of a random sort of casting of lots or poking the ground or a tray of sand with a stick. I've even heard people using potatoes. For this, they'll dig a potato out of the ground and clean it up and count the eyes in the potato, and that will be the beginning of their shield. So there's a number of ways you can do it. I've even heard of geomancy cards that have, it's kind of a shortcut to do this because it's kind of a lengthy process, but you could use the cards to do your forecasting or your divination in that way too. And it's, like I said, it's remarkably accurate. I was really quite surprised.
Is it kind of like another form of scrying, like reading tea leaves, or I guess optic?
Yeah, you know, it's like I said, it's hard to describe over the phone or over the radio. It's more of a kind of a visual thing. Anyone can Google it and see what it is that I'm talking about, since it's hard to describe verbally. But it's I think once you learn how to do it, it becomes easier to understand the whole process. And when you build these windows, they call it, then you reduce the windows down by counting the numbers in each window, and that reduces it down to another odd or even number, and then you reduce it down again until you end up with your final figure at the bottom of the shield. And that's what they call the judge. And that will give you the answer to the question that you have. That's a very simplified view of how it works. It's kind of complicated.
Have you heard of that, Sherry? Geomancy?
I've heard of it, but I'm not sure what the process, and I appreciate Clay explaining how that goes. How long does that take for the answer?
It probably would take up to 10 minutes to do the casting of the sticks. You have to cast the stick 16 times in order to get the first four windows filled. And then with that done, then you can build the sisters, they call it. The next four windows are called sisters. And then you boil that down to what is called the nephews. Some people call it the nieces. And then you boil those down to what is called the witnesses. And then the witnesses are boiled down to when you have the judge.
And then that's the answer to whatever the question was.
And that'll give you the answer to your question. The left witness is about the future, and the right witness is more about you and your circumstances regarding the question. And then the bottom window at the very bottom of the shield, that is the judge. So based on all three of those windows, you get more of a full sort of answer to your question, since now you have you and the aspects or the circumstances surrounding your question, the future based on that question, and then the actual answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm going to have to read up on that and look at a picture and see.
Yeah, it's really hard to try and describe. Yeah.
But the question I have regarding palmistry and the geomancy is, we talk to a lot of people, and we talk to some people of faith. Do you think there's any risk to anybody that wants to learn palmistry, tarot, runes, whatever it is? Do you think that there's a spiritual world that exists out there that will prey on somebody because doing that sort of thing would open a door? Do you have any experience with that or know anything about that?
No, not at all. I've not had any negative problems or any spiritual entities trying to intervene or change things or come visit me in the middle of the night or anything like that. So I've never had any kind of negative sort of response to anything that I've done. I've done the Ouija board for probably at least 10-12 years, and I've never had any negative effects from doing that as well. I think that people that are plagued with problems regarding demonic entities or ghosts or spirits, I think that these people are open to that already. I don't think that these spirits need to have the tarot or palmistry or any of those things to open a window. I think that the window is already open if these people are already kind of susceptible to that. So I don't see that these tools of divination are really a factor in whether or not people are plagued with evil spirits.
So
I know I won't.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, I know I won't play with a Ouija board. I don't know. That kind of freaks me out. But go ahead, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Clay, is the misconception with the Ouija board? Because I've played with one, and I have not had a bad experience, but it's not something I speak out. But what's your take on that, since you've been experienced with that?
I've had really good experience with the Ouija board. I've had really good feedback from it, correct information that I've gotten from it. I've never had anything evil or scary happen from it. I've never had the marker move on its own, you know, like you see in some of the scary movies, you know. And it's just been, for me, it's just been an easy tool to work with. And it's for me, it's been accurate. And I've just never had any negative effects from it. However, I will say that I do a protective blessing before I do use it. I do think that you are opening a pathway when you use the Ouija board. And so I like to have that extra assurance that I'm not going to have anything negative happen or any kind of attachments by using it. So I will usually always do some kind of a protective blessing to protect myself and the other people involved.
What do you think about people who say it's the Ouija board is a result of the ideomotor effect, you know, subconsciously your fingers are twitching or whatever? Because there was a thing on television, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe, but they had a bunch of people sitting at a table with a Ouija board, and they blindfolded them so they couldn't see, you know, where the planchette went.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked questions, they were all blindfolded. They didn't notice that the people that were controlling the experiment reversed the board. So when they were asked the question, yes or no, the planchette went to where the yes would be, but the board was reversed, so it didn't actually answer the question. And they're saying, well,
right,
it's the ideomotor effect, and it's just your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I think that's definitely an effect on a pendulum, which I've used a number of times. I think that is definitely connected to yourself. That has nothing to do with the spirit world. I think there was an experiment done with the pendulum where the closer the support that you have toward your hand, the less the pendulum would move. Most people that use the pendulum rest their elbow on a table and then suspend the string with the weight at the bottom with their fingers. And so there's all this distance between their elbow and their fingers for any kind of movement to be amplified, and that's where you get the movement with the pendulum. And so I see that as being something that's directly controlled by the person holding the pendulum. Going back to the Ouija board, I can see what you mean in terms of people actually controlling the planchette or the marker, except for that when you have questions about the future that are answered correctly, then it has to make you wonder.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of something that was correct? I'm just super curious.
Okay. Also, I want to preface this with saying that the Ouija board does not always spell out everything all the way. You know, if anyone's familiar with how the Ouija board is laid out, you have a series of numbers and letters across the top of the board, and then your marker will go to whatever number or letter is necessary to answer the question. And sometimes you'll get more of an abbreviation than an actual answer. And so you have to take that into consideration, too. So based on knowing those things, when you use the Ouija board, you have to work with it. And so the one experience that I can share with you with the Ouija board was with my first wife. I was asking the question, and this was early in my experience with the Ouija board, was the question was, when would she die? And the Ouija board just would answer, it would be soon. And then I would answer or ask the question, well, what would she die from? And it would come back, it just would come back with the letter C. That's all it would give me. And so I thought, well, that could be anything from a car crash to choking to, you know, you start thinking, well, what starts with the letter C? And a year later, she died of cancer.
Oh, wow.
So there's a good example of how something that is answered in the future, answered correctly. The Ouija board didn't spell out cancer. It just gave me the letter C. So I have to understand that the Ouija is not always going to give you everything that you need, but it will give you enough to go on. And so that was the one strong experience that I had with it.
Did you, Sherry, you said you've played with the Ouija board before?
Yes, I played it with it one time. And I did a prayer, and I got a couple things answered, and just got bored of it and let it go. So it was quite interesting. I asked if I had a girlfriend that was pregnant at the time, and I was asking the Ouija board if it was going to be a boy and a girl. And it said boy, and sure enough, she had a boy. So I don't know if that was, you know, some coincidence or was it just speaking from, you know, out of the air. But it was correct. So that was my very brief encounter with an Ouija board. What do you think is the stigma behind that, Clay?
Well, I think that the stigma behind the Ouija board, the palmistry, tarot cards, anything with divination, I think it directly stems from teachings from the church, and I think it directly stems from Hollywood, and that it's so pervasive that it's so drilled into people's minds that this is what happens when you play with the Ouija board or you work with the tarot. I was doing some tarot readings for some people at their home years ago. And when I showed up, two of the people that knew I was there for tarot readings left because they were afraid that by using the tarot in the house, I was going to bring something evil into the house. And so I really just think that Hollywood and teachings from the church have really drummed this sort of fear into people's minds regarding all forms of divination. There's people that are worried about doing the palmistry, which in my mind is more about science than it is about the occult. But, you know, it's the Hollywood and the church influence that causes people to worry that this is part of the occult family, and by dabbling with it, you're ushering in some kind of evil forces that now you're not going to be able to get rid of. There's going to be some form of attachment to you or some form of, like, haunting in your house due to that.
Not a lot of people know this about me, but I used to be really heavy into the metaphysical. I used a pendulum a lot. I've used the Ouija board a lot. I've used tarot cards a lot. And that was like 20 plus years ago, and I don't recall ever having any kind of negative experience. The one thing with the Ouija board that was kind of weird is I was outside and I asked for a sign, and there were a bunch of crows in a tree, and right when I asked that, they all flew off in a big flock. It was weird. I don't know if it was crows, but it was a lot of birds, and the tree was like right there. But that's the extent of my experience. But after talking to so many people on this show, it kind of just freaks me out, and it's not something I want to mess with. I know that there's a lot of videos on YouTube, which I'm sure the vast majority of them are fake, where, you know, people are possessed or all this terrible stuff happens, and yeah, no thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think these people are already susceptible. You hear about a lot of people that end up being possessed that are church-going people that would never think to do anything involving the occult, and yet they still have these attachments to evil entity. And so they're already susceptible. There was no need for any kind of divination for that window to be opened. So I don't really buy into the use of any kind of divination as opening a doorway for entities or evil spirits to pass through. I think the only exception to that might be the Ouija board. The jury's a little bit out on that still. I still do the protective blessing before I use it, just kind of just in case kind of a thing. But I've never had anything negative happen from that. In fact, before I became involved with the occult and metaphysical things, I've had more negative experiences with attachments from negative entities, and I guess some people call them ghosts, and so I've actually had more problem with that prior to delving into the occult than I ever did afterward. So that's a little ironic, I think.
Yeah, I try and stay away from all that paranormal as much as I did paranormal investigations since 2008. I've since stopped. I am a huge skeptic, even though I've seen a lot of weird things over the years, but it's, I don't know. I think I let it get to me psychologically watching. I love horror movies, so of course that's what's in the back of my head now, so I don't often go out and try and find ghosts anymore. It's just too freaky. But hey,
right.
we're running out of time. We have a couple minutes left, so I want to give an opportunity. If I don't know if you have a way, if people want to contact you regarding your palmistry or a website, Facebook, anything.
Yeah, I'm in the process of constructing a website, but if people wish to contact me, they can reach me at cf.tellings@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we got a minute left. I want to thank you so much, Clay, for coming on the show and teaching us a little bit about palmistry. It's interesting, and I think I'm going to do some research because, like I said earlier, it's one of the areas of the paranormal that I know, well, very, very little about. I've never studied it. So I want to thank you for coming on the show this evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jason, and thank you, Sherry.
You're very welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you at the Seaside Ghost Convention next year.
Yes, I will be there.
Sounds great.
Probably being a vendor in a gallery wing, big gallery wing.
Well, I'll have to come and visit you when I get there.
Well, we'll catch up before then, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, all right, Sherry, we got we can go a little bit longer, but yeah, that was great. Palmistry, know nothing about it, and now I know a little bit about it. And it sounds like you had a good reading. I'd like to learn more about it, although I'm a little hesitant of having somebody read my palm because I'm afraid it might show, like, bad stuff, although I know he doesn't personally say anything bad about things in my hands. But
that's a social stigma. he's good. Highly recommend him.
When I think about getting a reading, what I'm thinking about is like how it is in the movies when you're sitting across from the psychic and she reads your palm or the tarot cards and then she gets all freaked out and looks at you and, you know, and says you're doomed. That's what sticks in the back of my mind about getting a reading.
Wow.
'Cause I don't think I could handle that.
I don't think so either. I think that, you know, Jason, I think that if you get a reading, I think you should do that in person. I myself, as a psychic medium, I don't mind doing things over the phone. Most of my work is either over the phone or in person. But when it comes to, this is my personal feeling, when it comes to picking out cards, I'd rather have my energy on them. There's an energy imprint when you touch the cards and they're right there than somebody picking cards for you. It's just different. So that's just me. But if you're going to, like I said, have your palm read, go to CF Tellings. Absolutely wonderful. Very accurate, very down to earth.
Absolutely. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. We don't have a guest to announce for next week. Actually, I think that was my job, and I've been so busy, I better get on it. But I'm going to try and get some past guests that we've had on the show, some big names like the spiritual warrior Bill Bean. I'm going to send him a message and see if we can't get him back on the show, and because he's always a great guest. And let's see, what else? Do you have anything else to add, Sherry?
Nothing right now. I'm looking for another guest in a couple weeks, perhaps a real gypsy.
Ooh, see, you're good at it. Normally when I get guests, it's ghost hunters or UFOs, Bigfoot, but you're getting ones that, like, off the mainstream, which is good. Gypsy would be, Gypsy Curses. You know, I watched that movie the other day, Thinner, that Stephen King movie, where,
yes.
you know what I'm talking about, where she cursed the guy and he lost all his weight and... Yeah, gypsy. If you could find a gypsy that could talk to us about some of these old world curses, that would be super interesting.
I would, and you know, we're graduating. We're going to be like a AM like with George Norrie. I'll just cover all the aspects of the paranormal, from conspiracy theory to gypsies to Bigfoot and everything else. So yes, definitely.
Yeah, that'd be great. And if anybody listening to the show wants to be a guest, just send a message on Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. Some things that I'd like to learn more about is in the area of UFOs, which I have some pretty amazing UFO stories. I'm not kidding you. I'm amazing stuff. Stuff that I don't talk about a lot because it's really far out there, but involves evidence, like solid evidence of some stuff that happened to me. It all involves like the government and crazy, crazy stuff. And this all happened back in the 90s. But every once in a while, I'll get in there and I'll talk about it. So I have to do a show and I'll just lay it all out on the table about what happened in the late 90s out here in Oregon. Actually, there was a lot that happened, but yeah, we'll have to do that sometimes too.
We'll have to get a conspiracy theorist, too. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, and if we can't find one, I'll do it. I'm totally up to date on conspiracy theory. I can talk everything from 9/11 to HAARP up in Alaska. Yeah, I'm like the conspiracy theory dictionary. At aliens. Because those are the only things I know about are aliens and conspiracy theories. So anyways, we'll close the show. I'm going to close the show with a little promotion for Archbishop Ron Fail, a promotion that I made for him. And pretty soon, I like to make audio stuff, and we used to – I need to get more commercials for the show. So if anybody out there has needs promoting a book or a paranormal group or anything, they can get with me and contact us on Paranormal Horizons on Facebook, and we can partner up to kind of increase our stock of commercials to buy. Oh, yeah. So anyways, with that, good night, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll see you again next Sunday for a mystery guest.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for
being
there.
The Order of Exorcists. Of Exorcists.
There is a lot of good in this world, but with good, you must have the duality of evil. There are dark forces out there. You might not see them or be able to sense them, but they are there, waiting to prey on your weaknesses. If you have a desire to help others in need that are dealing with these dark forces, you can check out the Order of Exorcists under the jurisdiction of Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel. The Order of Exorcists is looking for exorcist investigators. You will be trained to make first contact with the clients, conduct interviews, and demonic investigations. Once that is completed, you will turn in an assessment for further action. If this sounds interesting to you, you can contact orderofexorcists.weebly.com for more detailed information.